It is time for your week in review. So much to get to tonight. Everything from Roman Reigns returning to SmackDown. Did WWE forget they have a pay-per-view coming up? Jeff Hardy has a really bizarre interview on SmackDown. Becky Lynch retained her Raw Women's Championship. And did WWE just go back to TV-14? I'm going to talk about that and so much more right after this. So as you guys know, cryptocurrency has absolutely exploded over the last several years. I actually even dipped my toe into it just recently. But what I'd really recommend you guys check out to help build wealth, real wealth, is libertytokens.net. So what exactly is that? Well, it's a multi-token with dual rewards in Ethereum, Bitcoin, Cardano, Binance Coin, and the US dollar. So how exactly does it work? Well, it's pretty simple. You browse their line of Liberty tokens, determine which of these Liberty tokens best suit your investment strategy. You acquire your piece of that Liberty token portfolio. And then from there, each transaction within your lineup of Liberty tokens rewards with 2.5% of the native asset and 2.5% of BUSD. You can then accumulate assets such as Ethereum, Bitcoin, with each Liberty token. It's simple. You passively earn income and watch your wealth grow. If you want more information, head on over to libertytokens.net, or you can head on over to their Twitter account at Liberty Tokens. You can also find them on Facebook and Telegram. And one little inside secret, their future plans include a wallet, an exchange, and a debit card to spend through fiat conversion. Again, all the information you need, you can find at libertytokens.net.
This is WWE superstar Drew McIntyre, and you're listening to the WWE Podcast.
The champ is
the one that everybody wants, me.
Becky Lynch is going to WrestleMania.
Playmore!
Austin 316 says I just ripped your ass.
This is my iron.
You're going to acknowledge me.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast Week in Review. It is our flagship show for the entire week, meaning it is our most popular show. It's the most downloaded. So thank you, everybody. I think on Sunday nights, people just wind down, are ready for a little bit of wrestling in your ears before you get the week started. And I know I am too. This is very, very therapeutic for me. And we've got so much to cover tonight or this morning or this afternoon, depending on your time frame here. So before we get going, though, a few announcements. Number one, thank you to our newest patron, Joshua Hand. Joshua Hand has joined us over there on Patreon. Scott McCabe also is the latest patron of the show. So thank you so much. You guys enjoy your ad-free experience. If anybody else wants to go ad-free, go ahead and do that. It's easy to do. For just $1 a month starting, you can get everything ad-free. No interruptions. Those ads you heard at the beginning, you don't have to roll your eyes or sigh or leave a nasty review because you don't like ads. There's an easy way to solve that, and that's $1 for the entire month. It's almost free. I mean, it's nearly free, seriously. So consider joining us on Patreon or on Apple Podcasts, where you can go 7 days free, and then it's $2.99 a month right in Apple Podcasts, so you don't have to download anything extra. But beyond those shameless plugs, I do also want to make a few announcements in terms of the co-hosts coming up the next few weeks as we get into Survivor Series and Thanksgiving and beyond. Well, first of all, somebody may want to remind WWE they have a pay-per-view coming up. Maybe send Vince a tweet. Maybe Instagram them. I don't know, smoke signals, some kind of Morse code. Let them know they have a pay-per-view coming up in 2 weeks because I think they forgot. And of course, I'm just being a jerk about it. But in reality, I think WWE is just, there's a clear reason why they are avoiding promoting anything for this pay-per-view. And it's really of their own doing that they are avoiding the pay-per-view, which is a damn shame because of how awesome Survivor Series used to be, that they are avoiding one of their big four. I don't even know if I consider it a big four anymore, because what they've done in years past is make it that SmackDown and Raw goes head-to-head occasionally, NXT would be thrown in here and there. And now, since that's the structure that they've continued to follow, they can no longer just promote the inner brand rivalries when they've got other great storylines going on within each brand, because everybody just dropped what they're doing and suddenly band together because they're wearing the same color it's really mind-numbingly stupid. And at least they've acknowledged that they don't have to just drop everything they're doing to do this. At the same time, while I appreciate that, because I'd rather see the storylines grow in each individual show, what they've done now, though, is create a pay-per-view of little interest. Why? Because there's no build to it. There's no build to this pay-per-view at all, other than I think Michael Cole mentioning it once on the entire show of SmackDown, which is really unfathomable. You know, just a couple of months ago, they were promoting Crown Jewel in like August. You know, they were skipping over the pay-per-view in September, and they just went right to, Crown Jewel. And now they can't even look at what's right in front of their face at Survivor Series because they've hamstrung themselves into creating a pay-per-view that is absurdly stupid and predetermined. Well, I shouldn't say predetermined. It's pre-manufactured. Of a rivalry that should not exist, does not exist. And by the way, if a rivalry like this really did exist, why is each show promoting the other show on their show? What do I mean by that? Simple. On SmackDown, they had something called a Raw Rebound, which recaps Raw's events. Now, why in the hell would, if there was a true rivalry between brands, why would that rival brand allow time on their show to promote the other show? I mean, just simple things like that. So here we go, guys. WWE is going to forget they have a pay-per-view, or they're not going to build to it until the final week when they're like, oh yeah, by the way, on Sunday, every champion's going to face each other. That is just the most ludicrous thing ever. And not, at least they're not saying the only time that SmackDown and Raw goes head-to-head, they haven't jammed that down our throats this year. But what they're also doing is giving away great matches for no reason. No reason at all. They're giving us exhibition matches between men and women that you could build to an actual rivalry and have an actual tangible result and a winner and a loser, and you could actually have consequences for those wins and losses. Instead, what you're going to get is a very watered-down exhibition bastardization of what these rivalries could be, simply for the fact of trying to make Survivor Series this big event of, oh my God, SmackDown and Raw going head-to-head. Oh, it's the champions facing each other. Are the titles on the line? No. Did they build to this at all? No. Did it organically come up in backstage interactions or promos, or did it manifest itself on tweets or something? No. So it is the most incomprehensible, terrible way to create a pay-per-view. When you're not promoting it, and these programs and matches are manufactured, and this brand rivalry is manufactured, I can't stand this pay-per-view now, and it's a damn shame what they've done to it. They should just drop it. Drop the whole brand stuff. No one cares. Nobody cares. I don't care what your marketing team says. What sells is not manufactured, traditional, It's got to be this at Survivor Series. No, it doesn't. You know why? Because it wasn't that for many years at Survivor Series. It was they had the traditional 5-on-5 elimination match, and that's fine. You know why that's fine? I'm okay with tradition in that sense because there was an actual tangible result from that. Want an example of a recent one? Team Cena versus the Team Authority, right? Right? What about that? What about Team Austin versus Team Bischoff in 2003 or 2004? That actually had tangible results. Austin lost. He gives up his co-GM position. Came back about a month later as the sheriff, but you catch my drift. If Cena won that match, guess what? He kicks the Authority out of power. And that lasted for about 6 weeks before they came back. Ironically, Seth Rollins had his foot on Edge to Edge's neck to get the power back of the Authority. But anyway, you catch my drift here. I just wanted to rant up front about the whole Survivor Series, just complete, I guess, befuddlement and bumbling, fumbling to this pay-per-view by WWE. It's really unbelievable. I mean, the fact that they've done this to Survivor Series is a crime. It's high crimes and misdemeanors is what it is. Somebody should hold them in contempt. I don't know. All right. Well, now that I've spent about 10 minutes ranting about this, because I really just felt very passionate about it, and we're all about realism here on the show. If you didn't already catch that, if you're new, we don't hold punches, okay? We don't cuss on the show unless it's mild swearing. We really don't. We try to keep it in PG. We try to make sure that it's somewhat family-friendly, although more like, you know, early teenager family-friendly, not so much like 8 and 9-year-olds, but that's what we try to do. And we try to be honest on this show. We don't try to just be state-run radio. We don't have any ties to WWE, which is, all, I think, a great thing, actually, because we don't have to feel like we have to formulate a soft message or pull punches or, oh, you don't want to hurt this person's feelings. Hell no. We speak it like it is on this show. So here's the thing. Up front, I was going to go to some announcements and I got sidetracked by WWE, and I'm going to get to TV 14 in a minute. That'll be my next topic of something I saw this week. The co-hosts for the next few weeks are as follows. We are going to have Amanda Jin on next week, and she will be attending SmackDown in person with her husband. So that should be a blast to talk to her this coming Sunday, a week from today. She'll be the co-host on the Week in Review. The following week, we hope to have the Botch Guy back in studio. I don't mean that literally, but it makes me feel more professional when I say that. So we hope to have him back next Sunday night, late at night, for the Survivor Series review. Saturday, of course, we'll be doing the preview and prediction. And I bet you guys can guess who that may be. I'll see if she's available. And then the following Sunday, which will be, let me make sure I get this right, the 28th of November, the co-host for the Week in Review will be none other than Uncle Chris. He's a great patron of the show, just supports us very well, and I'm very appreciative. And we've been trying to line up a time to finally connect and do a damn show. And what's made it so difficult, he's been a patron for many, many, many months, but what makes it difficult is he is in Switzerland, and you've heard him maybe on the mailbag a time or two. It makes it really difficult because he's in Switzerland, which is a 6-hour difference. So when I record at 9 p.m., for him, it's 3 a.m., okay? Not easy for him to obviously be up at 3 a.m. So that's the reason we haven't been able to connect, but it'll be cool to have a new voice on here. We connected a little bit before I hit record here on the show, and I think you guys will enjoy it. I really do. He is just very knowledgeable in wrestling. He's been watching it longer than I have. He started in 94. So we're going to introduce you to him if you haven't already heard about him or learn a little bit about him on the 28th of November. So that's the schedule for the next few weeks. But let's talk now about TV 14. And this is just very quickly, because my eyes... I couldn't have tell if they were deceiving me, if I was just imagining it, if I was hoping for it. But when I turned, I hit Hulu. That's how I watch my shows. I went on Hulu as I normally do today, and I hit play on SmackDown. And when I hit play, you know how it has the TV rating at the top left? It says, you know, TV M, TV Y, TV whatever. At least in the United States, it does. It had TV 14. As the stamp for the rating of the show, SmackDown. So did WWE just quietly go TV 14 on SmackDown on Fox? Did they just quietly do that? Was it a mistake? Was it a shifting that we don't know about? I don't know. I don't want to make too big of a deal out of it, because the show itself wasn't drastically different in terms of cussing or any kind of sexual content or blood or violence. It was your standard, you know, your status quo in terms of that. So I didn't notice anything startling other than that rating badge in the top left that said TV 14. And I'm like, am I watching? Did I just step in a time machine and go back to 1998? Like what just happened? And I was like, whoa. So I don't know. Take that with a grain of salt. I'm not trying to start rumors, but that's what I saw. Maybe somebody else who has Hulu can test this out. Start SmackDown for this past week and hit play and let me know if you see TV 14 pop up in the top left corner. Maybe it was just my imagination, but I tried to take a screenshot, but Hulu disables that when you are watching for good reason. So there, that's what I wanted to say about that. Now let's get to this week in review. And if you didn't know it, WWE emanated from the Ford Center. And if you have no idea where the Ford Center is, well, you and probably a couple million other people don't know. And that's because WWE didn't want you to know when they opened the show about where they were, other than just the name of the arena. It would be like saying, at least we're in the Amway Center. Well, where the hell's that? Right? We're in the Times Union Center. We're in wherever. And they don't name the town. That's how you know WWE is holding their, kind of hanging their head and tucking their tail between their legs, feeling ashamed and embarrassed about where they are. They don't want to make it a big deal about where they are. They're just kind of quietly saying where they are. Where were they? Well, if it weren't for Xavier Woods, we would not know exactly where we are, because we were told then by, I think, Pat McAfee, we're not in the Ford Center, we're in beautiful Indiana. And I said, oh God, here we go, right? You knew it was some town that Vince looks at and goes, ah, these damn hillbillies, you know, we don't want to give them any notoriety. If we're not in Madison Square Garden or a big sports town, an NFL city, we don't want to make it public. We want to keep our image. We want to make sure that we only are in the biggest and best places. The fans here don't deserve the respect. They don't deserve the mention of at least the city we're in. And it's so just small of them to do it. And if somebody says to me that it's for the sponsors, they want to make sure that they look as big as they can be. Well, you know what'll make them look as big as they can be? Revenue. And guess what? The money that they earn in Evansville, Indiana is worth just as much as money as they would earn in Madison Square Garden. The money is worth the same. I'm not saying they would make the same, but the money is the same. So that's what stockholders and shareholders care about. People aren't going to tune into SmackDown and go, wait, they're in where? Hickstown, Indiana? That's where I'm turning off SmackDown. Screw this. That is such a small-minded thing that WWE does, that instead of realizing that people don't give a damn where they are, but there's just that they put on a good product. And you, Vince, and Bruce Pritchard suddenly care. Well, they have forever cared about small market towns and being kind of hush-hush about where they are. It's so small of them. It's really just, I mean, I don't know what else to say, but I've talked about this before, but this is really apparent here. They said, actually, Roman said at the beginning that we're in this tiny little no man town. Now, you know that Vince had a hand in this little statement, because Vince truly believes that these towns aren't worth mentioning on national television, because Evansville sounds too Southern, too hick-like. By the way, Indiana is not that Southern. It's Midwest. So I know Vince hates the Southern accent. That's well documented, but it's just so infuriating. And I have no ties to Evansville, Indiana, none, but it says so much about them as a company. However, Xavier, who came out, did say Evansville, and I presume that they perhaps in part saved someone saying Evansville for Xavier to try to manufacture the pop for him, because he's the first person to actually mention the town. So maybe that's the reason. But so here's one thing I want to say now. First, Roman Reigns is just, it feels so good when he's in, right? Like, or when he's on the show. Last week, he said he took a vacation. Fine. He said that when you smash somebody like Brock Lesnar, you deserve a vacation. And then he starts pointing blame at Jimmy and Jay for losing their match last week to the New Day. And it's just playing the blame game, dictating out of fear. He is just such a great heel. There has been no missteps for a year and a half now, nearly. It's just brilliant stuff every week, it seems like. No real progression, by the way, on the Paul Heyman side of where he lands with the Brock Lesnar and Roman kind of tango he's doing. But when Roman Reigns shows up, the show instantly feels so much more important. He is officially the face of the brand. You could argue he's the face of the company now. He's gotten that good, that great, that quick. And I can't sing the praises enough. And we're going to get to that main event. Boy, I've got some thoughts on that in just a minute. But first, let's take a quick break for the sponsor of the show. And on the other side, we're going to talk about the New Day. And I've got some strong words from that for them that I hope aren't repetitive. I'm going to try not to say the same things I always say and put a different spin on things. And then, of course, I want to get right into the main event, and then we'll talk about everything else in between that happened on the show, and, of course, touch on Monday Night Raw as well. So stay right here. You're not going to want to miss this. So as you guys know, cryptocurrency has absolutely exploded over the last several years. I actually even dipped my toe into it just recently. But what I'd really recommend you guys check out to help build wealth, real wealth, is LibertyTokens.net. So what exactly is that? Well, it's a multi-token with dual rewards in Ethereum, Bitcoin, Cardano, Binance Coin, and the US dollar. So how exactly does it work? Well, it's pretty simple. You browse their line of Liberty tokens, determine which of these Liberty tokens best suit your investment strategy. You acquire your piece of that Liberty token portfolio. And then from there, each transaction within your lineup of Liberty tokens rewards with 2.5% of the native asset and 2.5% of BUSD. You can then accumulate assets such as Ethereum, Bitcoin, with each Liberty token. It's simple. You passively earn income and watch your wealth grow. If you want more information, head on over to LibertyTokens.net. Or you can head on over to their Twitter account at Liberty Tokens. You can also find them on Facebook and Telegram. And one little inside secret, their future plans include a wallet, an exchange, and a debit card to spend through fiat conversion. Again, all the information you need, you can find at LibertyTokens.net.
Welcome back to the WWE Podcast. Let's get back to more great wrestling audio.
Well, let's talk Xavier Woods. Let's talk New Day. Whew. Okay. Now, I started out this podcast with rants. I'm trying not to continue it because I will say this. Overall, I think SmackDown was good. SmackDown has been consistently good. And even the comment Roman made backstage about, you know, it was almost as bad as Monday Night Raw. There's a lot of truth into that, as they seem to be aware as a wink and a nod to fans, I think. We realize Raw has been terrible for a while. I think that's part of it. But anyway, we got Xavier and King Woods. God, I hate saying that. Come out and they interrupt Roman and the Bloodline. And they do their just kind of typical childish. It's gotten even more insufferable and unwatchable as Xavier has become king. And I will say that it doesn't seem right now anyway, after a few weeks removed from King of the Ring, the tournament anyway, that there's any sign of Xavier turning heel, which I was in support of. I was in support of Xavier winning if this was going to mean that Xavier was turning heel and getting a big ego and turning on Kofi and then we're off to the races. In fact, it seems like we're going the opposite direction. It is so far has been the absolute worst it could possibly be, the worst possible creative decision. And honestly, I've said this before, I'll say it again. The fans are to blame. As much as WWE should probably on their own realize this is a tired act, and hey, let's try something else and maximize what we got with Xavier. Instead, I do blame the fans. And I, again, in part, I blame WWE, but when they're in their comfort zone, we know they don't like to leave. And the fans haven't forced them to get out of that comfort zone. The fans do have an impact and they continue to cheer for this crap. So as much as I can blame creative, I am equally, if not more, blaming the fans. Yes, I'm going after you. That's right. When I say you, I mean that in the pejorative. I don't mean it as in individually you, because I'm guessing the people listening to this show don't support the garbage that we watch on a weekly basis with the New Day. I've been watching for years. I know I'm speaking really to the people that are probably not able to listen to this because it's past their bedtime, but that's the problem also is the demographic that are cheering for this garbage. And that is the same people that continued to push Roman Reigns when he was a terrible babyface. And the ones that continue to cheer for John Cena, cheered for him before he did his whole Hollywood thing and everybody cheers for him when he comes back because it's cool that he's back. But rather when he was just that clean cut Hulk Hogan version of modern day, version of Hulk Hogan is what I was trying to say. They're the same fans. What is that demographic? It is the children from like 6 to 14, most of them female, but a lot of them male too, and a lot of the women who are continuing to just find this hilarious and funny and cheering for these complete doofuses. And I know they're making a bunch of money to do this, but I believe that they actually are having a good time, which to me makes it even more insufferable, makes it more annoying to me that they're actually somehow getting away with this and making a whole bunch of money to act like children. And again, it's gotten worse. It has doubled down since Kofi or Xavier has become King Woods. And the other thing is too, now again, I do blame the fans completely. Now, at least maybe like 75% of it, I blame the fans. Because if they started booing this crap, WWE would have to be, they'd have to change. They'd force the change. So, but what I wanted to get to besides that and them being completely insufferable and the fact that WWE should ban parents from bringing kids to their show. Can we just have a built-in daycare to every arena where parents are mandated to drop off their children in just like this just massive daycare that is required to be staffed at every WWE event, and the children are not allowed to go into the arena where they can be audibly heard. Maybe that's the policy they should implement, or just outright ban children from the arena, period, right? Just say it's an adults-only show. Don't bring your kids. You bring your kids, they're going to be left outside so to fend for themselves. Maybe that's the policy we should implement and have them enforce. Hell, I'd love it. Oh, gosh. Oh, the backlash. Anyway. Okay. The meat of this, too, is Kofi always having to use people's proper names or overpronounced names or full names to be cute and funny. What I mean by that is, here's an example. Randy Orton, when Kofi called him Randall, same with Xavier. Xavier does the same thing. They call him Randall. Like, they have to use his full name to be different or cute. And what they did with Jimmy, they called him James Uso. So they can't even say his name right. They don't give him the respect that he deserves. And saying James Uso, as if we're supposed to find it funny that he can use his full name and kind of mispronounce his last name. That's I'm not kidding, guys. This is what middle schooler and elementary school kids do. And we're supposed to find it funny that a 40-year-old man is doing this on a weekly basis. That's funny to you guys? How is this entertaining? How is it in any way stimulating your brain to go, oh man, this is some good stuff. I hope I get to watch this every single week. Keep it up, Vince. Keep it up. How is anybody in their minds saying this outside of a underdeveloped brain, which you have between the ages of 6 and 14? That's the only demographic this could be possibly targeting. I don't know. It's just so, so insufferable. But let me get to the main event, because they finally decide that the winner between Jimmy and Xavier, the other one will have to bend the knee to the other, right? Like, if Jimmy loses, he'll have to bend the knee to Xavier. If Xavier loses, he'll have to bend the knee to Roman. Now, this match was about 9-10 minutes. It was good. I mean, I'm not, as much as I just crapped on Jimmy, or rather Xavier, he can go in the ring. I've never took that away from him. He's good, and he can talk on the mic outside of holding it like a wine glass, like it's some kind of cute way to hold it. I'm not a fan of that. He can't just hold it like a normal human being. But he's good on the mic. Outside of his silliness, he can get serious once in a while, and he's really good in the ring. I've got nothing to take away from him there. And he showed it again here with Jimmy, and he also, Jimmy is really good in his own right, so I think we all knew we were going to get a really good match here, and we did. Now, we had Jay try to help Jimmy with their assisted pin. That didn't work. The pulling of the tights didn't work by Jimmy. But we did get a good old roll-up by Xavier with a pull of the tights. That was not mentioned by the announcers. A very clear pulling of the tights by Xavier got Jimmy and put him on his back for the three count. And the announcers didn't even talk about it. And I guess their reasoning is, well, he's babyface. You don't bring attention to cheating of when it comes to a babyface. But they could have easily chalked it up to, well, what's good for the goose is good for the gander, right? Tit for tat. They could have easily gone that road, but they chose not even mention it. And that made no sense to me. But the match was really good. And the ending of the match, where Jimmy almost bent the knee to Xavier, I actually thought he was gonna. I mean, he was mad close. Really close. Did I say mad close? I feel like, did I just transform back to being 17 years old? Wow. I have not said that in a long time. I mean, that was like the phrase in the early 2000s. You're mad this or mad that. Wow. That came from some deep part of my brain that has been unlocked for some reason. I don't know. That was weird. Okay. I was going to edit that out, but you know what? Let's keep it. It's embarrassing, but let's keep it. Okay. But here's the thing. We, after all the silliness, finally get the adults back in the room when Roman comes out. And, you know, for all the things Roman has done over the last, on August, what, really 15, 16 months, from turning heel in August of 2020 at SummerSlam, I have been against him and wanting to see someone beat his ass. I have wanted to see it, and that's a compliment to him. This is the first time that if I was in the arena, I would have been cheering, screaming my face off in elation, seeing what Roman did to the New Day. It made me feel so warm and tingly on the inside, seeing Kofi get destroyed, seeing Xavier get destroyed, and seeing the spear on Kofi and beating them down like dogs. It was just like the adults are back in the room, right? Like the kids, while the parents are away, are tearing up the house, and they're doing their silliness. And then mom and dad come back and set the kids straight. And I'm not equating it to child abuse, but you get my analogy, right? Like, everybody straightens back up when the adults come back. I remember I did that as a kid too. I think everybody did. When the adults are gone, you raise a little hell. It's just naturally what you do. But in this case, it just felt so good. It's like, oh God, it was like I could breathe again when I saw Roman Reigns come out and Superman punch. It's the only time maybe that I truly enjoyed a Superman punch, where I actually said hell yeah out loud to a Superman punch, a move that I have criticized for a long time on this show, for the name of it, for the video game-esque of it, just for so many reasons of the Superman punch being an actual existing maneuver, and I've crapped on it, admittedly. This was the one time that I sat and I was so happy to see, and it made me just so happy. Maybe it made you too, but maybe not. I have a feeling some nasty voicemails are coming to me. That said, the one thing that I'm fearful now of in next week, as Roman was screaming in Kofi's face about, if you come here next week, we'll do something. I couldn't get the exact words. And I have a feeling, though, and how much do you guys want to bet, that the first time we see Kofi and Xavier next week, after this brutal beatdown, they'll be backstage talking about court gestures, talking about subjects, talking about a king's decree, making their 1,000th Game of Thrones reference about bending a knee, or you know, the hand of the king, whatever other Game of Thrones inside jokes they are trying to make, and they'll completely act like as if nothing happened last week, and just going about their business until somebody comes up and interviews them and says, "Oh, what about?" And then they maybe change their demeanor there, or maybe they even stay in character and try to be serious in their foolish characters. But either way, how much do you guys want to bet? Somebody needs to, I mean, take a vote on this, that Xavier and Kofi next week will act, at least when we first see them on camera, as silly and ridiculous as they've always been, as if nothing happened. And that's been also one of my biggest issues with the characters. And remember when Kofi lost the championship to Brock? Comes out next week throwing pancakes. Nothing happened. So, well, again, Big E did say it was one of the greatest moments in WWE history, Kofi Mania. If anybody, by the way, that's a joke. I was hoping, you know, I was hoping that Big E was just trying to make a joke, but obviously he's not on Monday Night Raw. To me, that's a hilarious joke. Anybody that believes that Kofi Mania is one of the greatest things that's ever happened in WWE has not been watching more than like 3 years of wrestling. You haven't been watching. You haven't studied wrestling. You have no idea what has happened in pro wrestling as a whole, as an industry. And if you believe that Kofi Mania is one of, even in like the top 50 or 100 things that's happened, you know, we have a problem, right? Like, we will not get along. We will not be friends. So, oh Lord, this is quite the show so far, guys. And I'm sure I'll get some reviews. I know of, oh my God, he's so negative. He spent 40 minutes ranting. You know why I can do that? Because it's my effing show. My show. That's why I can do this. But you guys are the ones that make this happen. So I absolutely appreciate you. Those of you that are listening to me, I would assume, at least on some level, agree. However, if you have some kind of grievance or disagreement with me, please, I am all ears, and I mean that sincerely. We have our mailbag show every Wednesday where you can join and email us, which is realwwepodcast@gmail.com. You can call us and leave a voicemail. The voicemail is always open, day or night, anytime, at 518-952-0247, 3 minutes or less. So there's a couple ways. I'm also on Twitter, Instagram. Search me out on Wrestling Audio on Instagram, or rather on Twitter. So those of you that have problems with me and my opinions, I mean that sincerely, because I do want debate. It's fun. Send it to me on those platforms, and I can answer it on Wednesday. By the way, if you haven't heard last week's, the Casual Wrestling Fan, Mr. and Mrs. Casual Wrestling Fan, they did the mailbag as far as the emails went last week. So I loved it. I know I got some great feedback from everybody else too. And I think if you haven't already listened to it, do yourself a favor, go listen to the mailbag from the Takeover show last week. You'll really enjoy that. Mr. and Mrs. Casual Wrestling Fan just did a fantastic job as always. So, all right. Well, the adults came back in the room and Roman beat down the New Day, which left a smile on my face. So congratulations, WWE. You have, you did what you always set out to do. You left a smile on my face and butterflies in my tummy. That's what you did. And you patted me on my head and sang me a lullaby to sleep. That's how I felt after watching that. Okay. Another weird, I'm not ranting about this, is we're going to try to transition from the ranting here and try to change tone a little bit. Kind of a weird one, though. This is weird. I don't know what to make of it. We had an interview, and I don't remember the name, because it feels like there's new interviewers and new announcers backstage on a weekly basis now. And she asked Jeff, I'm terrible with names, guys, as it is. Like, by the way, that's one of my weaknesses, names of people. Just, I am god awful. But the interviewer asked Jeff, I want to pick your brain about something. And she got cut off by Jeff. And Jeff was talking to Aaliyah, I don't know, about being a wrestler or something. And he was about to resume the interview, and he's still distracted by Aaliyah talking to Sami Zayn, who walked away to talk to Sami Zayn. And as she's talking to Sami ends up, I guess, requesting or giving her advice to wear a pants suit, I guess, because he's no longer the conspiracy theorist or the great liberator. I guess he's the elder statesman. I guess that's the latest terminology that he's using. That's fine. I love Sami Zayn. I really do. I really hope at some point he gets a run with the championship. I believe if Roman weren't around, he probably would. But Roman's so good that he's in his own stratosphere right now. And then Aaliyah, after Sami walks away, says, did he really just say that? Or is he always like that? And all Jeff said was, well, yes, welcome to SmackDown. So what was the interviewer going to pick Jeff's brain about? What was it, just a setup to get Jeff to say, welcome to SmackDown? Like, what was the purpose of this segment? I really don't know. Is it the mistrust of Jeff on the microphone? I mean, Jeff on the microphone is never really a great thing. Jeff on the mic is rarely good. Jeff is not great on promos. That's not a knock. I'm not ranting. That's just a fact. I think everyone knows that Jeff on the microphone is just never really, really good. So I don't know what this was, other than it just told me it's a total mistrust of Jeff on the microphone. Other than that, I don't know. So we'll never know what the interviewer was going to ask Jeff. Don't know. I don't know. Okay. So let's see what else happened on SmackDown. Oh, Sonya Deville. Here, guys. I know here's another thing that I know some people really don't like, but I do. And I want to give attention to it because I think it's absolutely worthy of it. And something that most people, I think, are finding frustrating. I'm not. And that's the Sonya Deville and Naomi storyline. This is building nicely. And I know some people are, and I've got this, I remember on my voicemail this past week, my mailbag, that, oh, just get to it, just get to it. We know where it's going, just get to it. But I think you're missing the point. If people are getting frustrated with this storyline, I think you're missing the point of having patience and building to a moment you want to see. Your own society that we live in, I think, is working against you and a lot of other people. If your reaction to this is, oh, can we just get to it? Can we just get to it? And that's the societal problem that is working against you is the gotta have it now, everything right now, no patience attitude. And issue that society has as a whole. Because everything's at our fingertips. I mean, we're carrying supercomputers in our pockets. You know, I mean, things like that would be unimaginable just 20 years ago. And with that said, this storyline is a slow burn story that some people can't handle. And if you can't, that's fine. I'm not telling you, you're forcing you to like it. You like what you like, and you don't like what you don't like. That's fine. But with this story, it's taking the long road of the payoff, where it's not just, oh, Sonya is a jerk for a week or two, and Naomi ends up getting retribution in like 2 weeks. And the crowd goes, yay, and then that's it. No, no, no. This is being built now for like 5, 6, 7, 8, 2 couple of months now, where Sonya is just screwing with Naomi. And this past week, we get Naomi beating Shayna Baszler, I think via a roll-up, because you got to have that roll-up, which I was actually a little bit concerned about, considering that Shayna Baszler was snapping people's arms just recently, and then gets a roll-up on her and loses to Naomi. But Sonya made a ridiculous rule that the match needs to be restarted. The rule that she made up didn't make any sense, and it wasn't supposed to. But then we get the restarting of the match, Carefoot a clutch, match over, and the heat continues to build. And that's the key element here. The heat is continuing to build on Sonya Deville. And that's a good thing. It's something you don't see very often. We are getting a rarity right now with the Sonya Deville and Naomi storyline. And really a kind of a B or C storyline. It's something that's rare and maybe why people are frustrated with it. But I think the frustration is being masked by the brilliance of heat building, where Naomi has yet to get her hands on Sonya. We have yet to learn why Sonya Deville has got this grudge and vendetta against Naomi. We have yet to learn that. There's more questions than answers. It's easy to follow. And the heat continues to build where you want to see Naomi completely destroy Sonya. And I do. And I'm still in this. And I got frustrated this week in a good way. I'm like, oh my God, how are we going another week where Naomi has yet to get her hands on Sonya? How is this still happening, right? That's how I felt. Now, I think that's the designed emotion. And it worked. So if you're getting frustrated, maybe it's just not for you. Maybe you don't even care. Maybe you don't care about the payoff. Maybe this isn't, you know, the type of story for you, and that's fine. But for me, I miss the slow burns. I really, really do. The slow heat burn building. It's a tried and true formula. I'm a big fan. And I can't wait to see Naomi completely dismantle her. Now, the one thing I will say is that Naomi needs to have a bit more of a trigger finger. She's kind of like Bianca Belair in that respect, where it's almost like you have to push them like to an unrealistic place for them to snap. Like Bianca was that way for a while. And Naomi seems to be that way right now, where it's like, how much more needs to happen before you just beat the holy hell out of her? Like, why are you allowing her to do this? Is it because she's in a managerial role? And if she's not in an in-ring capacity, you'll probably get suspended if you touch her. Maybe is that it? I think. If not, I want to see Naomi snap. Why is she just jaw-jacking? The jaw-jacking is over. She should be trying to go after Sonya, and Sonya retreats or has backup at this point. But that's the only criticism I'd say, or rather improvement that I would tweak. But right now, this is good stuff. It's an old-school heat-building machine. And you got to have patience. If you don't have patience, this ain't for you. And if you're not, that's cool. Most of WWE storylines are not patience driven. So, okay, let's see. What else do we have here? Again, this is a very heavy focus on SmackDown just because, and by the way, Michael Ritter covered SmackDown and did a great, great job of covering SmackDown. Always does a great job. And by the way, here's a plug for his show. He has a side show that he does, which is also very well done, called Football Function. We're in the heart of the NFL season now. People are already looking to the playoffs for the NFL, and he does an excellent job. Search for Football Function in any in your podcast app, specifically Apple, and subscribe. I think you'll enjoy it. If you're also a fan of the NFL, give him some support there and love. All right. Here's something interesting also, and something that I really enjoyed was Shotzi. And the reminder of the attack that she laid on Sasha Banks the week before, snapping on her, assumingly possibly turning Sasha babyface. Perhaps this was a double turn. Some people speculated that. But why would this be a double turn? Sasha Banks is, you know, what has she done to deserve the cheers of the crowd? Because she got beat down? How many times has she been on the opposite end of that, beating down somebody else? So what? She got what she deserved, you know? So is it sympathy that's going to suddenly turn her favorably for the fans? I hope the fans don't buy this. I hope the fans don't cheer for Sasha. Why? Because Sasha, number one, is a much better heel than a babyface. Much better. She's insufferable as a heel, as a babyface, rather. And she decides to take random vacations every now and then too. So you can't really trust that she's going to be around. You know, I don't know what personal issue she's got or whatever. The fact is what it is. She's not around consistently for long periods of time. So, but here's what I want to talk about. We got Megan Morant. Maybe that's the name, because I'm reading this on Bleacher Report, by the way, just to make sure I'm getting this correct. This was a promo by Shotzi. And here is what she said. I'm going to paraphrase this. She's going to run over everyone in her path, and she doesn't need a tank to do it. That was her final, essentially her entire promo was built around that. And I think that she had good poise, number one. Number two, she's getting rid of the tank. Yay. Maybe they listen to this show. Congrats. Handshake. High five. Whatever you want to do. And also, I'm a bit, I guess, befuddled by her look. And it's also, again, my ignorance of not watching NXT very much. I knew who she was, but I never took a really good look at her. I really didn't. And there's a couple things that are a little bit concerning about her look. And I'm going to try not to get quote-unquote real with you guys. I'm going to try to stay within storyline, but it's also kind of hard to, because she's wearing a couple and has a couple of looks on her that I'm not criticizing. I'm not body shaming her or, you know, anything like that. They're effective if the intent is to be shocking. And here's the thing. She's got two things about her that are a little bit much, much different than the other women on the roster. No, it's not the green hair. Of course, she had to go with the color that no one else has. Can't go blonde, for sure. You can't go blue, right? Can't go pink. Can't go brown. Can't go black. You got to go green. Green is it's like the only color that's still available for the women. They got to go through the whole, like, Roy G. Biv, right? Anybody that's been through middle school during the 90s, maybe they still teach it that way. Roy G. Biv. Is this falling on deaf ears for people? Probably. Anyway. So what the two things are this, her tattoo that's on her chest and her neck strap. I don't know the name of it, whatever piece of material this is, the little piece of material that's on her neck that says daddy. What? maybe somebody can explain this to me. It could be just simply my ignorance, but if you have something around your neck that it's I think it's called a choker that says daddy, or do you have daddy issues? Who's daddy? Is this a tribute to your dad who died, or I don't know, maybe somebody else can explain this, but it's a bit suggestive. And also the tattoo, look, I've got two tattoos. But this one is, it's a bit demonic. And look, I'm not getting into religion. I'm not getting into like anything, any kind of serious topics. Like, stay away from politics and religion. It goes for the case at work, usually with friends and on the WWE podcast. But regardless of what, I don't care what religion you are, this looks to me like a demonic symbol on her chest. I may be wrong. It's a goat with horns kind of wrapped up and a bit of a, I guess, some kind of flames in the middle of it with red eyes. Yeah, that's not character driven, guys. Like, you don't put tattoos on your body typically for your character, because characters come and go. Characters change, evolve. Vince likes it 1 week, doesn't like it the other week. You're not going to put something on your body that is temporarily going to be around. So take that for what you will. Maybe I'm not good at interpreting tattoos. Okay. That's not my area of study. I didn't go to college for 6 years to get a master's in tattoo analysis. Okay. But I will say it is a bit dark, much darker than any tattoo I've seen on a female. I've seen some, you know, tattoos on men that are a bit suggestive, but this one's right in your face. I mean, right there. And I don't know, maybe somebody can analyze it. Maybe looking into it a little too much, or maybe you guys don't care. But those are the things I'd say. Outside of that, I think she had an effective promo, getting rid of the tank, the new attitude, the aggressiveness. It's all good stuff in my mind. So let's move on to Los Lotharios defeating Cesaro and Mansoor. I will say I enjoyed this. I really enjoy Angel Garza and Humberto Carrillo together. I think that they have instant chemistry. And yes, it's a result of Vince not knowing what to do with these two and just putting them together. And they're of the same heritage. Vince has a really terrible habit of doing that. But in this case, I think it works. And you know, with these guys in the ring, with Cesaro, Mansoor, Angel Garza, and Humberto Carrillo, you're going to have a really good match on your hands. And that's exactly what we had here. And it saw Cesaro actually taking the fall here. And Cesaro ends up taking the pinfall. Amazing. The heels score the victory. Los Lotharios defeat Cesaro and Mansoor. Cesaro, man, a fall from grace for this guy. You talk about a guy in a roller coaster career. He's on like a Dolph Ziggler career, nearly. But good stuff. The crowd seemed to be into this. They seemed to be into this. The crowd was solidly behind Cesaro and Mansoor, or Mansoor. Again, pronunciation is very inconsistent with a lot of names in WWE. But this was a good match. Solid wrestling. And the heels going over made sense to me. Build the heat, my friends. Build the heat. People don't understand how effective heat building is. All right. What's weird to me in this match, though, we didn't see Shinsuke and or Rick Boogs. Why? Why didn't we see them try to get revenge on Humberto Carrillo and Angel Garza for what they did last week? On the Halloween version of the Halloween street fight or whatever silliness that was. Why did we not get they showed the video package before the match. And you're thinking, oh, okay. Nothing. That was a bit weird. I'm not angry or ranting. It's just kind of strange. All right. Let's see here. Drew McIntyre has his open challenge as they continue to just find a way to have Drew not in a singular program, not tied to one person for several months, but rather just have good matches to great matches with the other heels on the roster, have him in a way that makes him look dominant, try to do some repair for Monday Night Raw, and he gets to work with different people. He's not in the championship conversation. He's in a good place. I think this is a really good place for Drew. I think a better place would have been just straight out taking time off and away and out of the sight and minds of fans, because I think he needs a break. But that said, if you're going to keep him around consistently on a weekly basis, I don't think there's a better way to do it than keeping him in the eyes of fans, not in the championship picture, having an open challenge. So it feels fresh with Drew every week. I think one of the biggest things with Drew was it felt very repetitive with his opponents. And this is different for Drew. He's out there being a man's man, just saying, I feel like kicking someone's ass. Who wants to come out? And this week, we got Ricochet. And Ricochet had a little bit of not pep in his step, but an edge to his promo, slapping Drew in the face. And had a really good showing with Drew. And you know exactly what you're getting with Ricochet. Ricochet is all sizzle and no steak, as Jim Ross would famously say. What I mean by that is he's a showman. He's got great maneuvers. But at the end of the day, he doesn't have any substance to him. He's good for a few laughs, good for a few fireworks and a few oh my God moments and crazy reversals you'll never see and all that and the insane athleticism, but he's got no substance, nothing to him that gravitates the fans to him outside of the superficial need to see cool moves and amazing maneuvers, right? And I think even Pat McAfee said at one point, this is why I love SmackDown. I think something, I don't know what Pat or what, rather Ricochet did some kind of crazy maneuver during the match. And I'm thinking to myself, hey, Pat, it wouldn't matter what show Ricochet is on. The show and the color of the show doesn't dictate how someone performs. It just, I don't know. That was a comment. I'm like, what the hell does being on SmackDown have anything to do with what Ricochet is doing in the ring right now? The answer is nothing. Calm down, Pat. We love you in general, but sometimes the things you say are a little out of sorts. And get rid of the glasses, buddy. Unless maybe you lost your contacts or something. Maybe you lost them on the plane or whatever. The glasses don't suit you. You look 1,000 times better without glasses. The glasses age you like 10 years, 15 years. You're great on the mic. You're energetic. People love you. Get rid of the glasses, please. But anyway, Drew had a really good match. And I got to say, the Claymore from the, what was it, the moonsault was insane. That is, I actually had my jaw open on that. Even Michael Cole seemed genuinely like I've never seen anything like that in my life. That was crazy. The timing of that, the risks involved in that, great stuff. I mean, again, if you are into the superficial stuff about wrestling of just simply having great matches and don't care about the story, there's one for you. Good stuff. And Drew wins the match. And then, of course, it seemed like Ali is frustrated with Ricochet, tries to form an alliance. Ricochet declines. So we'll see if this does anything for Ricochet or if maybe Ali is going after. Maybe Ali is going after McIntyre. Mustafa maybe going after McIntyre. We'll see. But right now, I think McIntyre is in a really good place. This was this is a really, really good stuff. All right, let's see here. Happy Talk descends into a tag team battle with the Viking Raiders. Oh boy. So here is just something that I don't know. I'm so flat on this. I mean, they have the Viking Raiders, really the only true tag team on SmackDown, likely and arguably the only true tag team on the entire roster, who are guests on Happy Talk. They come out and they say, they're not here to talk. We're here to raid. Well, what does that mean? You fight, I guess. Is that where you're here to fight? I don't know. The Viking Raiders, they feel like they're playing wrestlers. They don't feel sometimes. I think it's Eric that feels the most inauthentic. Ivar, the bigger guy. I believe that Ivar is the larger man. He seems a little bit more like he's believably that way. Whereas Eric is just playing wrestler. Feels like they just kind of pulled somebody from the gym and they're like, hey, put on this mask and just cut a wrestling promo and play wrestler. That's how I feel Eric is in promos. It's, I don't know. Anyway, they are a genuinely good tag team though. And they put on a decent matchup. It was okay, but the Viking Raiders end up winning via countout, because just as the Viking Raiders looked like they were about to put the match away, Happy Corbin and Madcap Moss end up hightailing it up the ramp. So this is a program that's going to continue, and it should. As the legitimate tag team that they are, they need to have something to sink their teeth into, and I think this is fine. This is fine. This seems like this is going to be a match that maybe goes to Survivor Series or beyond. That's fine. I really think so. All right. Well, I think that covers the whole SmackDown show. As far as Monday Night Raw goes, let's see if I want to reiterate anything. Make sure I didn't miss something. The Kevin Owens Big E story, as Big E continues to flounder about as champion. Whatever adjective you want to use, be underwhelming as champion. That's what we're going to get continuously. And now that he dropped Kevin Owens on Raw to a no reaction, I think they're going to try to do some damage control next week, or this coming week, tomorrow night, that is. Kevin Owens apologized on Raw, and I still don't understand. I think they tried to phrase it as, well, Kevin Owens told Seth not to come out and that he wouldn't capitalize on any silliness that Seth tried. And then Seth sucker punched Big E. And then Kevin is still trying to, I guess, still tried to retaliate or capitalize on that move. And that's what Big E's upset about. I guess. I don't know. I hope a stunner is coming for Big E. I really do. I want to see Big E take a stunner. That would be a lot of fun. And the other thing I want to talk about on Raw is Damian Priest. I mentioned this on my Monday Night Raw review. He is just so damn good right now. And it's only 2 weeks, very small sample size. We don't even know what caused this change in Damian Priest. I don't care right now. I'm okay with still no explanation if they want to take their time to come up with one. But Damian Priest right now is a lot of fun to watch. The facial expressions and the body language to me are selling it. And that I'm satisfied for now with what I'm seeing from Damian Priest and not needing this long drawn out explanation yet. So I think that'll do it for me tonight, guys. As far as the weekend review, a little bit of a solo show for once as far as the weekend review goes, but no worries, have no fear. The next 3 weeks look like they will be filled with co-hosts and other voices other than my own, but I will be back on Tuesday night with your Monday Night Raw review. Wednesday will be the mailbag, and so send in your questions there, email, voicemail, whatever you'd like, carrier pigeon, to the WWE podcast, and I'll be answering that as they come in. And if you're a patron of the show, you get priority placement in the show. So not only with that dollar a month, you get everything ad-free and a shout-out and access to our Discord server. That's a private chat area that you can access at any time, not just during pay-per-views, that you can access anytime with our other patrons and talk wrestling. But you also get priority placement in the mailbag show, which means your questions get answered right up front. You don't have to dig through the show, wonder where your question's going to be. If you're a patron, you get your question answered right up front. We break our show into two sections, with the first half being emails, the second half being voicemails. And when we get to the voicemails, if you're a patron, you also get priority placement in the second half of the show with your voicemail being answered above everyone else's. So lots of benefits for essentially no money. Essentially. I know a dollar is not no money, but it's as minimum. It's the lowest amount you could possibly commit to with a maximum amount of benefits. Now, there's other tiers that allow you to get merchandise and everything like that on the show and actually come on the show and create a show with me. That's actually available to you. But for a dollar a month, you can't go wrong. So join us there or join us on Apple Podcasts as well. All right, everybody, thank you so much for listening. Give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts if you have a minute. It does truly help out the show. As always, thank you so much. I'll talk to you next time. So as you guys know, cryptocurrency has absolutely exploded over the last several years. I actually even dipped my toe into it just recently. But what I'd really recommend you guys check out to help build wealth, real wealth, is LibertyTokens.net. So what exactly is that? Well, it's a multi-token with dual rewards in Ethereum, Bitcoin, Cardano, Binance Coin, and the US dollar. So how exactly does it work? Well, it's pretty simple. You browse their line of Liberty tokens, determine which of these Liberty tokens best suit your investment strategy. You acquire your piece of that Liberty token portfolio. And then from there, each transaction within your lineup of Liberty tokens rewards with 2.5% of the native asset and 2.5% of BUSD. You can then accumulate assets such as Ethereum, Bitcoin, with each Liberty token. It's simple. You passively earn income and watch your wealth grow. If you want more information, head on over to LibertyTokens.net, or you can head on over to their Twitter account at LibertyTokens. You can also find them on Facebook and Telegram. And one little inside secret, their future plans include a wallet, an exchange, and a debit card to spend through fiat conversion. Again, all the information you need, you can find at LibertyTokens.net.